You're listening to DraftKings Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on today's show,
Frank Reich gets fired and we discuss what it means for the Carolina Panthers.
Brady thinks that the NFL product is mediocre and Alex Smith argues Brady isn't qualified to make that take.
Lastly, we talk college football and a ton of NFL news and the state of the Cleveland Browns.
All of this and much, much more on the Narcos Season 4 worthy return of the Tomahawk Show.
I would be honored if you played football for this team.
Football?
Now, most of you have been playing this game for 10 years. You got two more quarters, and after that, most of you will never play this game again.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Football's fun.
Fun, sir.
Fun, sir.
It's fun. You sure?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the world-famous Tomahawk Show. I am Andrew Hawkins, your humblest of all co-hosts, seven-year NFL media vet, as well as current ESPN analyst. Joined as always by my partner in crime, Joseph Thomas, 10-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro, College Football Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer, NFL All-Decade Team, 10,363 career. Is there anything else that I missed, Joe? I think I'm going to stop it there.
Yeah, there's a lot of other Hall of Fames that you wouldn't have ever heard of. But most importantly, I think I need you to send me some pesos, because as you can see, this is week two. I'm still in Mexico and I can't escape from this kitchen where I'm being held until the tomahawk and the tomaflock chip in enough pesos to get me released.
Well, I'm going to talk to the powers that be here at Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network, who are the generous people who bring this show to you. You're right, Joe. This is a complete contrast of what we saw last week. Last week, you were in the plush. You had beach behind you. You looked like you were running a cartel in Mexico. And now it looks like you're in a trap house. Right. Why is everything so yellow is my question, Joe.
Light is very low in this room. And besides that, everything is actually painted yellow. So it makes perfect sense, being that this is some flea bag motel. We found 5 minutes after learning that our flight got canceled and just looked for what is the cheapest place that's close by that we can crash until Tuesday, which right now it's Monday and we were supposed to leave on Sunday. So we just needed a couple days until we could finally find a flight out of town. And as you know, Thanksgiving, not exactly the best time to travel always, because it's great seeing family and friends, but flights always seem to get screwed up.
It does not look safe where you're at, Joe. We are also joined by Juju Gotti and, of course, the world-famous Fat Nat, 3 T's and a PH. What's up, guys? How was your Thanksgiving? Nat, we'll start with you.
My Thanksgiving was good. I just went home, hung out with family, stayed at my sister's house. I did have to drive back from the Bay, though, yesterday, and it did take like 8 hours when it typically takes like 5.5. So that was a little annoying. So yeah, don't travel in general during Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that sucks. Juju, where did you go for Thanksgiving?
I ain't do nothing for Thanksgiving. Nothing. I took a break. I took it easy.
Good for you.
It was me, Jordan Love, and Jared Goff and them boys in the living room chilling.
Hanging out.
I ain't had nothing going on. And also, Joe, blinked 3 times at any time if you ever in distress over there.
Oh, my God. How many times do I need to blink if I need immediate help from the U.S. military? I need an extraction.
Man, I
love it. 3 consecutive blinks.
This is literally the exact opposite version of the Mexican vacation you showed us last week. That's wild to me. It's the literal exact opposite. All right, so speaking of Thanksgiving, we finally put our results on Twitter to see who won the Thanksgiving food draft. And I have to announce that, and a bit of a shocker from my opinion, Fat Nat was the winner of the draft.
Oh,
she won.
Say by how much?
She won by quite a bit. She got 65% of the vote.
Exactly. I knew it. I knew that was going to happen. As soon as I drafted mac and cheese in the third round, you guys let that slip so far, I knew I was winning.
I still call it bullshit. Well, I'm second place with 19.1. Juju is third with 11.4% of the vote. And Joe is the house that nobody wants to visit on Thanksgiving with a disrespectful 4.5% of the vote. You only won 4% of the vote, Joe. Your reaction.
My reaction is this is clearly a rigged sham election here because
I don't know.
I think that mine would have won clearly had it not just been all family members of Matt voting and then giving some pity votes to the other guys that had pitiful entrees and side appetizers for their Thanksgiving meal. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that this is clearly just rigged against me.
I don't know.
Because of my wonderful vacation and Thanksgiving in Mexico.
It seems bad. Juju picked all meats and he still beat you by double the percentage. So
a lot of people that are on the keto diet these days.
Just
you
literally.
Call them politics, I call them politricks. So that's congratulations, Natalie. Well, great win.
All right. Who's still eating leftovers? Raise your hand if you're still eating leftovers. Nobody, just me. That's crazy. I
have been much to cook over here. I got some rotisserie that was from the Publix, the ones that they already cooked for you.
Damn.
I got two of them, but them bad boys.
Still there?
It was living life.
So how long are you allowed to continue to eat leftovers from Thanksgiving?
1 week.
1 week.
So I'm good then?
Yeah, you're fine.
Sure.
But you guys aren't eating Thanksgiving leftovers anymore.
Well, I didn't bring my leftovers back with me, so.
Rookie move.
No.
And Joe, I don't know what's going to be in that fridge that Joe's opening up right now.
This is why we're not eating leftovers. All I have is water.
Chopped head and 30 kilos of smack. Joe, close the fridge. Don't pan, please. We don't want to be implicated in whatever you got going on south of the border. All right, let's get into some time of headlines. Let's talk a little football. This is going to be a little bit of a curveball because it's not on the rundown. But it did recently happen, and I do want to speak about it because I think there's some connections here. Frank Reich was fired as the Carolina Panthers head coach. Joe, am I breaking this news to you?
You are. Yes, okay. I'm actually shocked. I thought you were going to tell me that he was the head coach, then he fired himself as the offensive coordinator, then he reinstated himself as the offensive coordinator, and I was ready to talk about that topic. However, the fact he got fired, like, what was this, 8 games, 9 games into his tenure is unbelievable. Firing of all time. It makes no sense.
I mean, Joe has been in Mexico, so he's been out of the news a little bit. He has no idea what's going on. But Frank Reich, I believe his record was maybe, what is week 12? So probably 1-10, 1-11, something to 1-10. So he's 1-10. And here's the shocker. This is the third year in a row a first year coach to a team was fired before the season was out. So it's not even one and done. So last year it was Nathaniel Hackett got canned by the Denver Broncos. The year before that, we remember Urban Meyer was kicking kickers and he got fired. Before that, it was 43 years since a NFL head coach was fired before the conclusion of their first season. Any reaction there? Do you feel like this is like just happenstance or do you think this is kind of probably going to be the new way things are going to work in the NFL? Don't all jump at once. Joe, okay.
You're still shocked, clearly. Usually the point guard, right. You know, gives a little head nod to who they want to talk to.
Right, a little alley-oop off the glass or something.
I'm in Mexico. Everything's happening a little, like, 2 seconds slower down here because the Dos Equis ultras have been going down very smooth all week. So I'll let Juju fire in first.
Look, I think this is more revealing on David Tepper, Jake Tepper, whatever his first name is, Tepper, head of the Carolina Panthers organization. You paid Matt Rhule all that money. That was a bad idea. You chose C.J. Stroud to pass on C.J. Stroud and go with Bryce Young. That was your idea, brother. Come on now. It's coaches in the league, I feel like, deserve to be fired. not saying anything about the Chargers, but I don't think Frank Reich got a fair shaking at this point. Like, come on, what you want him to do, man? He's a scapegoat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way, too. I don't feel like there's enough, like, it has to be something egregious for you to get rid of a coach that quick. And I think it really is C.J. Stroud doing so well. It's probably reflecting bad on the coaching staff to the new ownership in Carolina and Dave Tepper. Because I can't think of a logical reason where this makes sense. Frank Reich is actually... he's been successful in this league. And that doesn't always point to you having success in another place. And obviously, we're not there on a day-to-day basis. But because you drafted a rookie first overall and your team still sucks, like, that is normal. Like, I know we get tricked into believing right. that quarterbacks come in and they look like Patrick Mahomes, or there is no maturation or, you know, evolution process for these guys, or that, you know, shocker, the rest of the team is still the same team that you had outside of the quarterback, and it takes time. This just feels like the growing pains of a new owner who has no clue what he bought with his fantasy football team net.
Yes, I know. I agree. I think it definitely reflects more on the ownership than it does on him. This is too fast. I feel like he didn't have enough of a chance. I mean, 11 games into the season is, I mean, yeah, like Juju said, there's other coaches that should have been fired way before this. So I feel like it's just too quick.
So the new interim head coach, I believe, is Chris Tabor. Joe, you and I know Chris Tabor because he was our special teams coordinator for a very long time with the Browns. And I mean, there's, I don't want to say there's few coaches that I'm a fan of, because I'm a fan of a lot of coaches, but there are a few coaches that I'm a bigger fan of than Chris Tabor, because I just think he has a really good way of commanding a room. When you're a special teams coordinator, and I've said this on this show previously, I know it's like, oh, you go get a defensive coordinator as a head coach, or go get an offensive coordinator because they're offensive gurus. I have a theory that special teams coordinators are actually best positioned to be head coaches, but they never get those opportunities. And the reason being is they have to motivate the guys, the bottom 20 guys on the roster, not the ones that are paid the most money. And they have to get them to go out and give everything they have for the thankless work that nobody gives a shit about. And then on top of that, they have to deal with offensive players, defensive players. They have to deal with practice squad players. They have to deal with stars in a lot of respects. So they are the best positioned to be able to command a room of players because they know the personalities and how they are different. I'm telling you right now, a defensive lineman is different than an offensive lineman, which is different than a wide receiver, which have different personalities than cornerbacks and what have you. So, again, I don't know if this will be a real audition for Chris Tabor, but he has always been one of those coaches that I've been around that I've felt like has deserved the opportunity to be a head coach because he's had so much success as a special teams coordinator. But then also, because he can command a room the way that is the most important for a head coach, Joe.
Yeah, I'm still working on translating ESPN Mexico right now. Panthers anuncian el despido del entrenador el jefe Frank Reich. So other than that, it sounds like things work badly for Frank Reich. But it seems like he's becoming the scapegoat by all reports were that he wanted C.J. Stroud. He wanted the big, tall, pocket-passing quarterback. He didn't want the small quarterback, Bryce Young, who potentially is going to have a hard time seeing over his line. Maybe he would be a little injury-prone because he's a little bit smaller, a little bit less stocky than C.J. Stroud. So it really doesn't make sense that he was getting fired. But to your point about Chris Tabor being a great coach, I think he is a great coach. He was our special teams coach for a while, and he is really good at motivating players, offense, defense, everything that you just said. However, I think your mistake is that in today's NFL, the biggest indicator of success is when you have a head coach that's your offensive coordinator that's also coaching your quarterback, and those two are working hand in hand, which is what you need to have success in the NFL long term. You need to have great quarterback play week in and week out. And I think 20 years ago, when it was a much more balanced NFL where you could win with defense, with run game, you could win with special teams, like having a guy like Chris Tabor could be huge, right? Because then it's about motivating everybody, making sure they're on the same page. But now it's so much more of a quarterback driven league that I want a CEO head coach like a Kyle Shanahan, like an Andy Reid, who's going to coach my quarterback, who's going to come up with a game plan, but then also be good at delegating and making sure that the defense and the offensive and the special teams game plans all mesh together, and making sure that you're coaching those coaches from the top down. And motivation really doesn't, to me, come from like the rah-rah speech, like the kick guys in the butt anymore. It's more about, hey, this is the game plan. I'm going to show you how this game plan puts you in the best position to succeed. And you're going to go into the game more well-prepared and in a better position to have success than the guy you're going against. And that's how I got motivated. That's how I see most guys in the NFL being motivated. So I like your point, but you're wrong.
No, I think that's bullshit. I'm going to call bullshit on that, Joe, because number one, you had 10 different head coaches and 10 different offensive coordinators. So you wouldn't know a successful coach if it came and kicked you in the nuts. Okay. Number one. Number two, here's why you're wrong. Because yes, a sexy offensive guru sells the tickets. Oh, you got the right head coach. He can be great for your quarterback. But if you look at all the best teams in the NFL now, they're defensive teams. Simple as that. Yes, Patrick Mahomes is, if you luck up and get a Patrick Mahomes, great. But even in that scenario this year, the reason why the Chiefs are contenders is because of their defense. Philadelphia is in the trenches. It's their defense. Jalen Hurts is great, but their defense is great. The 49ers, nobody's signing up for Brock Purdy. Yes, the fact that Kyle Shanahan can run that offense, great, but it's because of what they have on the defensive side of the ball. And even the Cowboys, you name it, the good teams have great defenders. The reason why it makes sense for your head coach to be an offensive coordinator is because people think like Joe, and they're all trying to tab offensive people for head coaches, and so nobody sticks around. So even if Chris Tabor was to get the head coaching job and he had the right offensive coordinator and the right defensive coordinator, his offensive coordinator, once he had success, he'd be gone the year later because Joe would hire him to come coach for his team in Germany, and now Chris Tabor is left with his palms up again. Because Joe is out here poaching everybody that can show any kind of prowess in the passing game in American football.
But that's why you got to hire those guys to be your head coach. Then they can't be stolen away. That's the whole point. If you hire a special teams coach or a defensive coordinator, and they hire a great offensive mind on the offensive side of football to coach offense and to coach the quarterback, like as soon as they have success, they're going to leave. That's why you don't do it. And I love how the fact that you tried to just pretend like, oh yeah, all the best teams in the NFL right now are all driven by defense.
They are.
And then you named everybody that was driven by their offensive coordinator, who's their head coach, no, with a great quarterback, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, Jalen Hurts. Like, all you've been doing, and I wish I could pull up the stats right now, but it's all in Spanish, so I can't really read it. But basically, all the best teams in the NFL right now have great quarterbacks and a head coach who's an offensive-minded head coach.
But their defenses are better than their quarterbacks. We just talk about their quarterbacks the most.
No, you said that they have great defenses. You didn't prove it with anything other than saying, yeah, the Chiefs' defense is keeping them in there this year. What?
God is
no,
ass.
They're not.
They're the top five defense. Yes, they are. That's why their offense has been terrible this season. Their receivers drop passes. Travis Kelce is at Taylor Swift concerts all goddamn day, and he can't beat double coverage anymore because he's a Swifty. So the defense is what's keeping him in it. I'm telling you. And you can't check that because you can't read Spanish.
I can't. So I can't. Say anything right now. I'm trying to find the stats. Look, the top defense in the NFL. Don't have
them. You need to check that window behind you because look at the Jimenez cartel is closing in on you.
I'm going to get my ass.
So, okay.
They're actually
that's
big
the case.
Fans of special teams coordinators. I'm in deep trouble right now.
All right,
I want Tabor to be the head coach.
So if offensive football is driving everything, then tell me this, Joe, since you know so goddamn much. Why did Tom Brady come out and talk about how offensive football is mediocre now? And I'll give you some direct quotes here. He, in an interview with Stephen A. Smith, he said there's a lot of mediocrity in today's game. He said coaching isn't as good as it was. The development of young players isn't what it used to be, and the rules have allowed a lot of bad habits that impact performance of the game. Okay, that is from Tom Brady. Alex Smith, another quarterback who played 18 years in the league, former first overall pick, he pushed back and said that Brady played in the most mediocre division in football. And right. He can't talk about today's game because he just retired last year, which is a very good point. When I heard Tom Brady's rant, I was like, you're right. But then I heard Alex Smith, and I'm like, damn, he's right, too. Because it reminds me of, like, when old players talk about how LeBron wouldn't have been able to perform in their day, but they played 10 years against LeBron. I'm like, wait, what the hell? What are you talking about?
And he averaged 30 and 30 on him.
Exactly. So I guess my question to you, Joe, which is kind of connected, yes, but a little disconnected. Do you agree with Tom Brady that offensive football in the game today has become mediocre because of the development and the way that the rules have been changed to favor the offense?
So I think what happened here is Tom Brady listened to his own podcast and realized how boring it was. And so he tried to finally say something that was controversial. Any chance I get to go throw a few barbs at Tom Brady's podcast, I'm going to do it right now. Right.
You do take
this
that.
Is the ultimate, like the little guy trying to pick on the big guy to get interest in their own podcast. But anyways, what I think Tom Brady meant was in the last 6 weeks in the NFL, the offensive play has been poor. Because if you look back like 2 and 3 years, the NFL offenses were scoring more points than ever. And it's only this season specifically that defenses have kind of taken over. And really, that's only because of the number of injuries that we've seen at the quarterback position. The thing that I can do, even in Spanish, is look at the logos of the NFL teams and remember all the the quarterbacks that were injured. So just looking down the list, okay, the Bears and the Vikings, who are playing tonight, I believe, since it's Monday right now in Mexico, both quarterbacks that were starters injured. Packers, Lions, one sucks. Okay, Juju just left. He doesn't even really care about this conversation anymore. But bottom line is there's been all sorts of injuries. The Jets lost Aaron Rodgers, obviously. The Browns lost Deshaun Watson. The Bengals lost Joe Burrow. Panthers, as we talked about, have a rookie quarterback. And let's see here.
Daniel Jones is gone.
Daniel Jones is gone, but he was all right. Really, other than those guys, those are kind of your best quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think really it's more of the NFL moving towards quarterbacks that are mobile rather than pocket passers. Like when Brady was in his heyday, right? And the NFL was much more of just a pure pocket passing league. You had Drew Brees, you had Phillip Rivers, you had Aaron Rodgers, you had Tom Brady. You had a bunch of guys that stood in the pocket, and so they didn't get injured, right? Because the ball was coming out in 2 seconds, and they were really good at efficiently moving the ball down the field. I think today's offenses are more dynamic. They're more difficult to stop, but they do expose your quarterback to a lot more hits. And when your quarterback gets injured, it kind of sinks your season.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was looking – that's the point that I was digging for right there. I know you had something in you, man. And I know you can't read Spanish, and I know you didn't graduate from Wisconsin, so you have trouble
– to get to it.
You have trouble reading English as well, but you did get to a good point there. Because you're right, Tom Brady, from your perspective, it would look less detailed because every element had to be a certain way for you to get the ball out on time and to basically, you know, put you in position the way that you did because he was so great at being from the pocket. Because what's he going to do, scramble around, run around and improvise? That's not what he did. So it was very much detailed and precise. Same with Peyton Manning, same with Drew Brees, to your point. Alex Smith, he probably took offense to the mediocre quarterback thing because he's probably categorized as mediocre compared to Tom Brady. So it's, if you listen to everybody's take, you can always find the bias in it.
Which is usually Alex Smith, bias target Alex Smith, itself.
Alex Smith, like, don't go on. My replacement came in was Patrick Madame Holmes. How did that ain't mediocre? Right. This is Superman that replaced me. Tom.
Right.
Exactly.
Another damn good point. All right, we got to it. You get smarter on this show. So Tom Brady, Joe wants to debate you and show you why he is a expert at offensive football and you're not.
Yeah, I think it's important to throw in there too. Alex Smith came from the RPO zone read type scheme, and that's what most of the offenses are kind of featuring right now. So it's easy for him to be offended, be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yes, it is simpler, but it doesn't mean it's less effective.
Right.
Because it doesn't take as many details because it's reading one or two guys, maybe reading half the field. But it's just as effective, if not more effective, when your quarterback can move and run. Yeah. Whereas when you're in the pocket, like, you have to be so good at everything to be able to just get the ball. And if you don't, you're going to get killed. And those guys couldn't stand it because they were little. They weren't big, strong, fast, physical guys like we see today.
I cannot wait to get on ESPN and spit this take as my own. I'm not kidding.
Yes, there you go. You're welcome.
This is what this show is actually really, really useful for. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into some more NFL news from this week.
Drop the bass.
Welcome back to the Tomahawk Show. Before we get into some NFL news, I do want to talk some college football for a couple of reasons. Number one, my alma mater, the University of Toledo, is top 25. We're 11-1. We're rolling. Joe has no idea what 11-1 looks and feels like this year. Although he's wearing his Wisconsin hoodie, he should understand that my team is ranked above his. I don't think in our history of knowing each other this has ever happened. So let's all just take a moment to soak that in real quick, that the Toledo Rockets.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Feel it. Feel it.
Stings the nostrils.
Yes, absolutely. all right. So as we get into some NFL news, we won't talk about the top 25 Toledo Rockets anymore for this show. But we will stay within that state at Ohio State, where wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr., son of Marvin Harrison Sr., for those who are slow, is reportedly still undecided on whether or not he'll enter the NFL draft. There is reportedly a chance that he returns due to not accomplishing two of his main goals. Number one, beating Michigan, and two, playing in a Big Ten championship in Indianapolis, where his father played for the majority of his career. So my question, Joe, would this make Marvin Harrison Jr. stupid for coming back when he is clearly the best football player in college football of any position, surefire the first receiver off the board, if not a top three pick, and also not realizing that none of those accomplishments truly matter in the grand scheme of football. Joe, your thoughts?
It doesn't make him stupid. However, if I was his advisor, I would certainly tell him.
Yeah. Let me hold on.
You need to go to the NFL draft for two reasons. One, like you mentioned, like your window to play football in your lifetime is short. Mm-hmm. And so going to the NFL and realizing that dream while you're healthy, while you're young, while you have a top five potential ranking, it makes sense, not only financially, but as far as like the goals that you want to accomplish in your life. And it's easy to say, hey, I want to play in a Big Ten championship game. I want to beat Michigan. Yeah, that's great and everything. But if something does happen during your senior year and you come out and maybe you're not drafted as highly as you would have been, or you're not able to realize that NFL dream, do you think it would have been a sacrifice that was worthwhile to stay and try to accomplish some of these goals that you wanted to in college versus going and living your NFL dream, which is going to set you up for the next part of your life where certainly you're going to have lots of goals and dreams. Like for me, I love playing in the NFL, but it gave me the opportunity now to come down to Mexico with my family during Thanksgiving, get kidnapped by the cartels, and to be stuck doing a low-level podcast in the kitchen of one of the cartels' basement drug labs.
So, wait a minute. This is the highest-level podcast in the world.
Thank you. Sorry. That was the only thing that Juju was offended about in that entire conversation. That's right. All right. We're going to do the highest-level podcast that smashes the Tom Brady podcast from the basement of a drug lab somewhere in cartel land. However, most importantly, I always would question players who say, like, I want to go play for this team to win a Super Bowl, and that's the only reason I want to come back and play one more NFL season. You see guys doing it all the time in the NBA, in the NFL, like, hey, I've only got one more year left in me. I want to chase a ring. I'm going to go try to play for this team. Or in college, hey, I want to beat Michigan. I want to play in the Big Ten championship game. Like, that's a great goal. It's a great team goal to have. However, you have such a small impact on reaching that goal that I always wonder myself, if you came back just for that one thing and you're not able to accomplish it, which in a lot of respects, especially if you're trying to win a Super Bowl or a national championship, like, you could have the greatest season of all time for your position, surpass all your own personal goals, and still have abject failure accomplishing your team goal. Mm-hmm. And then where does that leave you as far as like the decision to come or to leave? Because you're going to feel like you were a failure. If your reason to come back was to win against Michigan, make a Big Ten championship, and you don't achieve that, are you going to feel like it was a wasted season? And so I think it's really difficult when you do things, you're motivated by a certain goal to make your decision on whether to come back or to go to the NFL based on a team goal that you really don't have a whole lot of impact directly, personally, that could potentially leave you feeling like it was a wasted season and it was a bad decision long term.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm gonna fix the way that I worded that question, because I heard Marvin Harrison is about that action. That is so.
Allegedly.
I'm just saying.
Allegedly, yeah, yeah.
It was a question. It was. I just read what's in the rundowns.
But look, before you switch it up
under the bus.
Before you switch it up, look, I've been there before, where I feel like I had a certain goal in my life, and no matter what folks can tell me, hey, you making money doing this, you doing this. Bro, you can't tell me that my dream of wanting to be a musician has to just go aside because I can have success in the sports world, or I can have success in whatever world. And we forget, Marvin Harrison come from money, man. He can never play another down and be set for his life. Mm-hmm. If he know for a fact that in his heart, he ain't going to be able to sleep without knowing he beat Michigan and played in that Big Ten championship, and it's his body, it's his Maserati, hey, brother, come back, dude, because you got to be able to look at yourself in the mirror for the rest of your life. And I have a hard time looking myself in the mirror for some of the decisions I made. So I'm like, shit, bro, if he feel it, it might not make sense to us, but I have more power to you, Marvin.
My opinion, and I love that, Juju, I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. Is the perfect prospect. And we can get into this, too, because Michigan – beat Ohio State, and I know we got a lot of Ohio State fans that are listening, and they calling for the head of Ryan Day. And I put a tweet out there that they should probably look to Brian Hartline to take over. It got a lot of mixed reviews, but I think Brian Hartline is literally the perfect college football coach for a lot of reasons. But when I talked to Brian Hartline 2 years ago, I went to maybe a practice or something. And this is before Marvin Harrison, like he was like bubbling and people talked about him, but it wasn't like to that level yet. I think Garrett Wilson and Olave were still there. And I was like, well, what do you think about, you know, Harrison Jr.? He was like, he's the best receiver I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, really? He's like, no. Like, literally, NFL, college, you name it, already he's the best receiver I've ever seen in my life. And so what I think is he just understands this so much, the way he approaches the game, his work ethic, his obvious skill level. I think this is what he's supposed to say right now, because all this is going to do is solidify his draft status, if not make him take him even higher than what it is. Like, someone's going to be like, I'd rather have him over this quarterback that I'm not sure about, because he has that kind of mentality. And that, my friend, is graduate level thinking, Joe.
You're exactly right. He's saying all the right things. He's probably going to come out anyway. Right. You're exactly right. I mean, let's be honest. There's no way he's coming back. Maybe I didn't really articulate exactly my thoughts. I think having goals and dictating the decisions that you make based on those goals for personal goals that you have full control over is a great thing. And if you want to be the award winner at your position in college football as a receiver, the Blitnikoff, and that's why you come back, great. And you hope to help your team win a championship. That's awesome. But like, he could be the greatest receiver of all time, have the greatest season of all time in the NFL or in college football. But if his coach gets fired and they bring in some bozo who's just running the football, you're going to feel like, you know what? I did everything I possibly could and I fell short of my goal. And I just wonder what that's going to do to him, like mentally, physically, personally, if that happens. Like, for you, Juju, if you're like, yeah, I am really successful in media, but I don't want to give up my goal to be a musician, but your ability to become a musician is way more dictated by the other 10 guys in your band and they all stink. And you're like, well, I'm focusing all this effort on this musician thing and I'm doing a great job, but we're never going to reach the goal that I'm sacrificing all these other things for because everyone else around me stinks or isn't good enough. Like, I do just get nervous about guys trying to attach goals and decisions together that they don't have a ton of control over.
Yeah. Well, sticking with the nepotism theme, Arch Manning hasn't had a lot of tick at Texas after being the number one recruit going there. Obviously, he's a part of the Manning lineage, so he's probably really good at quarterback. I'm just going to make a guess there. Do you think it's time for him to hit the transfer portal? Juju, jump in. I mean, you got a reaction. What you got?
Nah, brother. Like you said, brother, welcome back to the days of, hey, sometimes you draft a quarterback and he's not Michael Vick the first year. He's not finna change the team the first year. Hey, brother, you go to Texas, sit down. I don't understand who your daddy and your uncle is, but we got somebody right now that we feel is can get us a little bit better results than you. Then wait your turn. Next year is his turn. Hey, that's a big school. That's a big responsibility. Make sure you got to know what it takes to be a man in this position at this prestigious school. So I don't have no problem with him sitting his ass on that pine for 1 year at least. There's a transfer portal. Don't just hop right into it.
So you say stick with it. You say don't jump out of that just because you ain't getting the tick. Is there a quarterback coming back next year?
He's a sophomore this year.
He's a sophomore. So, okay, he might have 2 years on the pine. All right, well, hey, I'm all for a competition. All right, last topic we got here for college football. I need grades on Deion. The Deion experience has come. It has gone the first year. I think he finished 4-8, I believe, was it? It was a lot of hype coming in. We was all riding the Deion Sanders wave. I'm going to start with Fat Nat here. Fat, what grade do you give Deion, and what is your final perspective on his first year as the head coach of Colorado?
I mean, my grade, I would say, I'm going to give him an A-. Just because of, you know, what he created there and how, you know, like he kind of turned it around in Colorado when no one was, you know, I mean, not that we weren't expecting it. It was kind of expected that he was going to do something big there, although it didn't turn out the way he wanted in the end. I feel like he changed the trajectory of that program. So I'm giving him an A-, and I loved all the hype I saw and I loved everything that he was able to do there. A-.
All right, Juju, what's your grade? We got an A- on the board so far.
I give him a B. The same thing what Nat said. Just mm-hmm. because, look, you're leading men onto that football field, and those men seem to enjoy playing for that brother. He getting the most out of them. NIL deals through the roof. Mm-hmm. Colorado is Boulder. I ain't never even seen that many people post about Boulder in my entire life. So he breathed life into the city. So I give him a B for this season. I know the season could have been way better. A couple of missed field goals here, a couple of Colorado states there. But as a whole, I give my boy a B.
All right, got a B, got an A minus. That's the kumbaya version. Joe, they lost 8 of their last 9 games, bro. Let's see. Are you gonna keep it real like you always do, Joe? Are you gonna, you know, fall in line with Fat Nat and Juju?
I'm giving them the same grade that I got my second semester of senior year when I was entering the NFL draft and doing my draft visits. Shit. He's getting an incomplete because he didn't go to school at all. He started out strong, and I liked the message he was sending. He put Colorado on the map. He made it interesting and cool to be a CU buff. I'm sure the admissions went through the roof. They probably got a lot of young players that were recruits that were considering going to the school that probably ended up signing and are going to potentially be part of the turnaround, but it's just way too early. I think he did better than most people expected. The challenge now for him, though, is that you came on the scene, you told everybody about how great you were going to be, and then you were great at the beginning, and then you sucked at ass for the second two-thirds of the season. And so how much trust did you lose with those players and then the potential recruits and the boosters who were buying in and believing everything you said, right? If I'm a dad and I always tell my kids, like, hey, breakfast is going to be ready at 8 o'clock. If it's ready at 8 o'clock, the first 3 days, they're getting all excited and it's amazing, right? If all of a sudden the next 8 days, like, breakfast is not ready till 10, pretty soon my word is going to be lost on them and they're not going to believe it anymore. And they're going to stop showing up at 8 for breakfast. Even if it's delicious pancakes and waffles with some banana syrup on top and some whipped cream. So I think the question is going to be, how do they start next year? How many recruits are they able to get in there? Because it's a little bit like at Wisconsin, right? Luke Fickell comes in, everybody really is excited about him, but it does take some time to build a program. Even in today's era of NIL and transfer portal, like, it's going to take some time to put your system into place, to get the right players in there, to get them to believe in what you're selling them consistently, and to build a consistent winner. So incomplete for me.
All right, incomplete. I'm going to give him a B minus. Because he didn't have everybody talking. He has the recruits. He can bring the amplification. He just has no linemen. And you're going to need linemen in big-time college football prime. I also think you should jump to the next school. Just keep doing what works, man. Come in, make a hay, get out of there all the way until you get back to Florida State, which is, I know, where you ultimately want to go. I also like how Joe tried to throw in his breakfast menu in there because his Thanksgiving menu was so shit. In case you guys didn't pick up on that, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into one of our favorite segments, Run Pass Option. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Tomahawk Show. Now we're going to get into one of our favorite segments, Run Pass Option. In this segment, Joe and I are read a topic, and then we have the option to either pass on it or run with it. And we each get 2 90-second timed opportunities to run with one and 1 45-second opportunity to rebuttal. Those are the rules. We almost never abide by them, but I'm going to read them every time as if this time we actually will. Of course, Juju, you can chime in where you please because you won't be reading the run pass options because you refuse to do so on the show. Fat Nat.
Racism. No.
You're up first. Take it away.
All right. For the first time in 59 games, the Steelers have gone over 400 plus yards in a game. It's not a coincidence since they fired their offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. Should the Steelers fans look forward to higher scoring games? Joe, run or pass?
I'm going to run with this one. And I've been a big Matt Canada fan because it's been very good for the Cleveland Browns and our fan base because their offense has been pitiful. And I actually think Matt Canada was holding back Kenny Pickett a little bit. I know that's probably a crazy opinion in Pittsburgh, being that they hated Matt Canada so much that at a Pittsburgh Penguins game, they were chanting fire Matt Canada a couple months ago. So I'm not sure that they're going to set the world on fire. They've got some good talent, but it's really hard to completely overhaul an offense in the middle of the season. So I think they're going to be a little bit better, but I don't expect them to all of a sudden turn into like the early 2000s Indianapolis Colts overnight.
It's been 43 years since the Steelers made a coaching change mid-season. They, like, never have done it. So that's, like, a really big deal that they fired this dude in the middle of the year. Juju, what are your thoughts there? I want to get your perspective.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, to me, are as boring of a team as your Houston Texans used to be. Like, I don't check for the Steelers. I'm so happy for the success of the brother, Coach Tomlin. Hey, man, he has a great track record, and the Steelers have a great track record of not firing and hiring coaches like the goofy Carolina Panthers. So I commend them for sticking with Matt Canada this long. You feel me? Because I had checked out on their offense. They have so much talent around the board, and it was inexplicable for them to get that little production. So I think that this move will propel them into the future with high hopes.
I like that. All right, Fat, what we got next?
All right, so the problem with running backs being turned into freelancers in the NFL is that great running plays are so much more exciting than passing ones. A running back breaking several tackles for a 50-yard touchdown is arguably more hype than watching a quarterback throw for the same amount. Is running back becoming the coolest position in the NFL?
What is this? I'm not even going to let you get to the run pass. I feel like this is a pointed a pointed segment right at me. But go ahead, finish the question, Nat.
No, that was it. Is running back becoming the coolest position in football? Hawk, run or pass?
Run. And I hate the fact that I even had to say run to get into this answer. That's bullshit. Running back is not the coolest position. It's boring. Okay? The only time running backs are exciting is when they're acting like wide receivers. You think Derrick Henry is exciting? He is the best version of an old school running back. He runs in a straight line like Forrest Gump and runs through people and through barricades and doors. And that is not exciting.
That's exciting as hell.
That ain't exciting.
A stiff arm every now and then. That's exciting, bro. No, you sound like a hater.
Yeah, no. You sound like a hater, huh? No,
Tyreek Hill is exciting, okay? I would even say A.J. Brown, being able to move at that size and the agility and catching and that ball up, that concentration to catch it, like, that's exciting. Christian McCaffrey is exciting because he acts like a receiver. He runs routes.
No, that's not why he's exciting.
You know
Isaiah Pacheco is exciting because he runs through brick walls and reckless abandon.
Yeah, he looks like he had too much coffee. That's why Isaiah Pacheco is exciting. He runs like a toddler.
Bijan Robinson. Come on.
They're only exciting because they can catch passes. You name me one running back who doesn't catch passes all the time and tell me that they're exciting. Give me one. Austin Eckler dresses like he played football in the 1940s. And even he's excited.
Wow. He just caught a stray. Why my boy just catch a stray like that by his clothing?
No wristbands, pants below the knees, Joe, the perfect amount of white showing. It's like he's the default person that they put on the posters in the NFL locker rooms, Joe.
Throw this on the Tomahawk Instagram social media poll right here. What is the most exciting NFL player in NFL history? Which is redundant. I guarantee more than 50% of the people will say it's Barry Sanders.
They don't even make running backs like that no more. If you have a Barry Sanders today, what position does he play? He plays receiver. His name is Tyreek Hill.
He's not tall enough.
You're wrong.
The question is slot receiver the coolest position in football? The answer is yes, because of all the cool things that they do. Like Juju mentioned, they run people over, right? They run through the brick wall with reckless abandon. They can catch the football out of the backfield. They make linebackers miss in space. Receivers, they do such boring stuff. Yeah, they're fast. They make a cool catch, but it lasts like half of a second, and then they fall out of bounds because they don't want to get hit. Or they're running across the field, and then it just is a track race, which I love track and field. I watch the Olympics religiously. But just seeing a foot race, yeah, that's cool, but it doesn't even come close to the things that a great running back can do when they get the ball in their hands. First of all, they got to make a big fat guy miss or they're going to get killed. They're going to get absolutely smushed like a bug on your windshield. Then all of a sudden, then they're in the second level. Now they're using some speed. They're using agility. They're using the stanky leg to get guys to fall and break their own ankles. Then at the end, now they look like a receiver when they're running down the field and it becomes a foot race. That's why it's exciting. And it doesn't happen that much because it's so much harder. Everything in life that is much more rare and much more difficult for us as entertained fans, like those are the things that you want to see the most, that you in your ward center in your brain appreciate the most, because it's so difficult and it's so rare. I mean, I'll go back. I was in Mexico this week. Still am. We were on the beach one night. Actually, it was Thanksgiving night. And we were just, you know, taking some pictures and swimming in the ocean right at dark. And all of a sudden, I'm on my boogie board and my daughter's next to me. And she goes, "Dad, is that a sea turtle?" And sure as shit, there's a baby sea turtle like this big. I picked it up and we followed over to the beach right from where we were. And sure enough, there was all these sea turtles hatching, all these babies. There was hundreds of them. And we walked up, we saw where their nest was, and they were just pouring out of there. It was kind of scary. It was like Arachnophobia, if you've ever seen that movie, where there's like spiders coming out of the drain. You know, it was like all these little baby sea turtles coming out of the ocean. But knowing how rare that situation is to be in that spot at that exact moment when those sea turtles were hatching, you got this feeling of, wow, that is something that is so special because of how rare it is. And that's exactly what it's like when you see a running back break off a big run.
I've never
full circle on his ass.
I didn't know where the hell that was going.
Log off. We are burnt.
Burned. Go home, Hawk.
I don't know
why you use the turtles to show you how good a running backs are. Magnifique.
I don't know if Joe is accidentally inhaling whatever they got in that smack house that he's staying in, but I had no idea where the hell that was going.
That was beautiful.
Jeez. All right. Well, if they're so exciting, why do they get paid like the people flipping signs on the sidewalk outside the insurance company? All right, Nat, what do we got next?
He didn't even let us answer the question.
Right. The system, brother.
Yeah, it's the system. Keeping the man down. Huh?
Right.
All right. So Mac Jones got benched for the fourth time this season after throwing two picks in the first half against the Giants. After the game, he danced around a question that a reporter asked, asking if he thinks the coaching staff prepared him well enough ahead of the game. He's gone from a serviceable starter to pretty much unplayable. Is it time that we ask if the Patriots have failed Mac Jones? Joe, run or pass?
Well, hold on, Joe. Before you jump in this one, we have 90 seconds. So I'm going to pass on this for you. And we're going to just go to the next one, which actually we're not even going to read because it says something about the Broncos defeating the Browns and what have you. So I'm just going to give you 90 seconds, Joe, to talk about the state of the Cleveland Browns right now, because this is what the
Please
people come here for.
Mustard.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now you're down. Take it over yourself.
Now you're down to 45 seconds.
Thanks a lot.
State of the Browns, Joe. Go.
State of the Browns. We're in a little bit of turmoil right now. It's just because of all the injuries right now. Like, Kevin Stefanski did a great job at the beginning of the season overcoming the injuries, especially to Nick Chubb. We lost Jack Conklin, but they're just continuing to add up, including on the defensive side of the football. We lost Rodney McLeod. Newsom was out. Miles Garrett got banged up in this game. Like, we had the number one defense in the NFL that was carrying our entire team. We could run the ball a little bit. And so that was a good formula. But now our defense is continuing to get gutted, and it's hard to keep up with some of these teams in the AFC, especially that have these good offenses. So whether we get some of these guys back from injury, I think we'll determine how competitive we can be down the stretch. But I do want to mention really quickly, my favorite interview from the last week was Jim Harbaugh when he got asked by the Michigan media, what is his level of respect for Ryan Day? And he couldn't even say, oh, we got a lot of respect for him, but we're just focusing on the game. Like, he was just blown away. He couldn't say anything. And then he was like dumbfounded. And then he was just like, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just focusing on the game. It reminds me of the Mac Jones answering the question of if he felt like he was prepared, because he's not being well prepared. They're not treating him the same way that they should a young player. They're treating him like Tom Brady, who's had 7 Super Bowls in 20 years under his belt, who can be coached super hard like that. Mac Jones is way too fragile at this point in his career. So they've failed each other right now, and I think they just need to blow that whole thing up.
Yeah, they probably will.
Run.
Run.
All right, well, that does it for this episode of The Tomahawk Show. Shout out to Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. As always, shout out to you, the Tomaflock, for tuning in. Make sure you check us out on the Levitard Show YouTube page or on the DraftKings Network Wednesdays at 4 p.m. or wherever you listen to shows. Download, subscribe, rate 5 stars so you never miss an episode. Till next time, my friends. Joe, take us out.
Yo, hawk yourself and send money to release me from this Mexican prison.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.